that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we talk with the director and cast members from the production that opens tomorrow at Riverfront Playhouse in Reading. It's a stage adaptation of one of the greatest romantic stories of all time, Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. We also talk with artist Waif Mullins, who's showing his oil paintings and pastels as part of an exhibition called Chico Masters, which just opened at the Chico Art Center. Mullins is perhaps best known for his artistic visions of Bidwell Park. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
At Reading's Riverfront Playhouse, Pride and Prejudice, a play based on the novel by Jane Austen. In just a couple of minutes, Tom will be talking with the director and cast. At Orland Arts Center, the exhibit Summer Smorgasbord, showcasing the work of three different artists. This show includes water media, oil painting, pencil drawings, and pastels. The center's open 10 to 6, Tuesday through Saturday. Tonight, at Chico's Downtown Plaza, hear the classic rock and country sounds of the Retrotones. The concert starts in just 3 hours from now at 6 o'clock. 1078 Gallery in Chico presents Seen and Heard, local musicians as artists. Musicians from Chico are displaying visual art pieces they've created. Tonight, starting at 6 o'clock, these musicians-turned-artists entertain gallery goers with an evening of music. Tomorrow, the Chico Arts and Cultural Foundation will conduct a free tour of the city's downtown public arts projects. The tour starts at 10 a.m. at the Our Hands sculpture in front of City Hall. The tour lasts about an hour, is less than a mile in length, and ends at the downtown plaza. The Chico Art Center opens its latest exhibition, Chico Masters, Past and Present Works. This show highlights three local artists and their preferred media. On today's program, Dolores Mitchell talks with one of this trio of artists, Waif Mullins. And you can visit the center tonight to meet all three of these Chico Masters at a reception from 5 o'clock to 7. Starting next Thursday, it's the 20th annual California World Fest in Grass Valley at the Sierra Nevada County Fairgrounds. This four-day festival brings together a diverse selection of musicians, dancers, and visual artists from around the globe, and it features 8 stages. For more information, go to worldfest.net. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. Painter Frida Kahlo explained her process like this. I paint my own reality. The only thing I know is that I paint because I need to, and I paint whatever passes through my head without any other consideration.
Pride and Prejudice. One of the favorite stories anywhere. And it's immensely popular and has been for 200 years since it was published in 1813. There's lots of different adaptations of this for movies and plays. But a stage adaptation is opening tomorrow at Riverfront Playhouse in Reading. And we have the director and some of the actors from that production. We'll start with the director, Jennifer Levins. What's special about Jane Austen in general, do you think?
She talks about the little things in life. You know, most of us live our lives, and it's little things that make up your life. It's not the big things.
Well, a lot of things are different in today's world than they were in Jane Austen's world. You know, we don't have so much of an emphasis on landed gentry and just kind of the rules of society in the same way. Why do you think people are still able to relate so directly to this society that really in many ways is different?
Did you ever hear of the 1%?
Yeah.
And the American debutantes that can only marry into other moneyed families? You know, it's the same thing.
Well, all of you Jane Austen fans out there, know that the main character of this story is a very smart and headstrong woman named Elizabeth Bennet. And Elizabeth is being played in this production by Chelsea Bailey. How do you think that Elizabeth fits into the world and is able to be headstrong, even though in this society, in 1813, women weren't really seen as people who could be powerful in any way?
One of the things that is so much fun about Lizzie is that she doesn't really care. She kind of has her particular worldview growing up, but she knows enough about who she is and what she wants in life to not let it weigh her, despite the fact society doesn't want her to be that way.
Talk about your relationship with Mr. Darcy. It's not immediately love at first sight kind of thing. It kind of develops.
It does, because they kind of like each other, but she and him keep having misunderstandings. Oh, you should see the face I'm getting right now. But it's really about they have these views about who they are and the way they're supposed to live their lives, with Darcy up higher than she is technically. And her below, she doesn't see it that way, and he does.
What's it been like for you adjusting to this society of early 19th century England?
I grew up with this story. It was one of the very first classics that my grandmother ever bought me, and I've read it so many times, I've actually started tallying in the back how many times I've read it, and it's north of 20. So for me, it was a little bit easier to kind of step into that because I've been so familiar with the story. And the biggest adjustment for me has been everybody knows this story, whether it's the book or the version from the 40s or Colin Firth, Keira Knightley, or most recently Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Everybody has a conception of how this story is supposed to be. And it's about creating that story in a unique way that doesn't caricature other versions of it.
Do you get to wear some fun period costumes?
Yeah, the costumes are fun. The wig is not so much fun, but the dresses are definitely a lot of fun, and I love my ball gown.
Of course, the other principal star of this show is Mr. Darcy. That's the character. He's being played by Michael Ossa. So what's it like for you playing such an iconic character, you know, Mr. Darcy?
Well, it was incredibly unfamiliar to me, but a lot of my friends had told me that I can relate to this character.
So you hadn't read the novel before or seen any of the adaptations?
I've only heard of the title.
So as a newbie to this Jane Austen classic, what's it like submersing yourself in this society of early 19th century England?
Very intriguing. It's been quite a trip.
So Elizabeth Bennet doesn't have the same reaction that most people do to the landed gentry. She just doesn't respond to your airs.
No, she doesn't. In fact, she rebels. This is something that Mr. Darcy has never seen.
Do you think he likes it in a certain way? Yeah, I know he has to get used to it, but is he surprised, is he delighted a little bit by the fact that she doesn't just do the same thing that everybody else does in relationship to him?
Yes, it does take him by surprise. It gives him a different perspective on her that he's never had on anybody else. And the more he looks into it, the more intrigued he is with her.
We also have here the assistant director, who also has a role in the show. This is Richard Grace. So what's this adventure been like of co-directing or assistant directing Pride and Prejudice?
Like Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth's relationship, it's complicated. We actually have four directors all together. Two of the others are assistants, along with me. I do my part. I look at props, help organize things, and throw in my two cents if need be when evaluating a way a person and portrayed a certain character or played out a certain scene.
So there's four directors, Jennifer Levins, and there's three assistant directors. Why do you think this production takes so many people to direct?
It's a very big undertaking, and this is a classic. Jane Austen's greatest work, probably the greatest work in literary history, and it needs to have its bases covered.
Have you or any of the other assistant directors been serving as a dramaturge? In other words, have you been looking up and researching the period to make sure that things are period correct?
I know one of my colleagues, Chloe Freeland, has done some research on costumes to make sure that the clothing is period appropriate. So, yeah, we've done some research. We've done a little digging.
So in addition to assistant directing, Richard, you're also playing a small role in the show. What's your part?
My part is Mr. Hill. He's the valet, majordomo, butler, if you will, of the Bennett household.
So what's it like being a servant of this family, who themselves are not real upper class? You're kind of low on the totem pole as far as society is concerned, aren't you?
Yeah, but my opinion is that Hill's been with this family for years, and he doesn't feel like a servant. He feels like a member of the family. True, they do give him orders, and he does say, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am, but he knows they don't mean anything demeaning, and it's just his job, and he's happy to do it.
Describe the group dynamic of the Bennett family, because as the majordomo, you are kind of an integral part of that unit, that group of people.
I would say the Bennets are probably one of the earliest examples of a sitcom's dysfunctional family. You've got a household of seven people, plus the two servants. You've got the patriarch, who is distant and apathetic. You've got the matriarch, who is a major drama queen, constantly stressing out about the little things. One of her daughters just disappears, and she's worried about whether or not she has a wedding dress. And then you've got the eldest daughter, who is just really sweet and gentle and forgives and loves pretty much everybody. You've got the second daughter, Elizabeth, who breaks the molds. She goes against the flow. She does not play by anybody's rules, and she does not put up with crap from anyone. Then you've got the second two. In this play, they don't really play much of a role, but one of them is constantly buried in a book, and the other one's just crying all the time. And then you've got the youngest, who is a major flirt.
Would you say that your role as a servant kind of echoes that classic comedy trope of the servant who is actually smarter or more in tune with the truth of things than the rest of the family?
I'd say so, yes.
Pride and Prejudice on stage at Riverfront Playhouse. We've been talking with members of the cast and with the director, Jennifer Levins. Jennifer, how often does Riverfront Playhouse do period pieces like this?
Let me see. The last time they did one, it was called The Madness of King George, and it was 12 years ago.
Do you think that your audiences like a change of pace, you know, going back into a more long-ago period?
You know, I don't know about that, but I think they're going to like this. Every time I talk to people about it, all they can say, I love Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. Come and see the show.
So it opens tomorrow night, and this weekend it only plays on Saturday night. What nights does it play in weekends to come, and how long does it run, Jennifer?
It runs through August 6th, and it plays Friday night, Saturday night, and we have a Sunday matinee.
And for people who haven't been to the Riverfront Playhouse before, where is it located in Reading?
1620 East Cypress Street.
And people can buy tickets, but not there at the theater in advance. They can get them at another theater. Where is that?
the Cascade Theater downtown, and they can go online for the Cascade Theater and get them online, or they can call. The other way they can do it is to go through the Riverfront Playhouse website, riverfrontplayhouse.net, and then there's a button where you can say, buy tickets.
I hope you and your cast break a leg for opening night tomorrow night of Pride and Prejudice at Riverfront Playhouse. Thanks to all of you.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm in the studio of Waif Mullins, who is having an opening tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. at Chico Arts Center in the Amtrak station in Chico, 5th Street and Orange. He'll be showing in an exhibit called Chico Masters together with Geraldine Kopp and Chris Contello. How about your involvement with the art department at Chico State?
Well, that was a pretty interesting period of time. I met some wonderful instructors during that time.
Had you come to the program with much background in art?
I'd been painting in oils since I was 10. I started saying I'd be an artist when I was 6. I had a studio from the time I was about 15.
Well, where did this incentive to make art come from, do you think?
Well, I know the earliest foundation of it was my mother. I had a chalkboard, and I would draw on the chalkboard and then show her what I drew, and she would lavish praise on me, of course, as any mother would, and then I would erase it and start all over again. And that's where it started.
You were involved for a long, long time with Avenue 9 Gallery, which, of course, sadly closed 2 years ago. What was that experience like?
I loved all the artists that I got to know, the whole group of them. It was a wonderful place to show. There was always enthusiasm there and excitement.
What will you be showing in the Chico Masters exhibit?
A retrospective. I will have a couple of commissioned portraits that I'm borrowing from the people who commissioned me to do them. I will have things that have been part of my collection for years, plein air paintings of Bidwell Park. There would be travel-related pieces started in Jamaica and Mexico. There will be self-portraits. So there'll be a real broad range of things. And then, of course, hopefully some of the figure pieces from the Monday morning figure drawing.
I'm most familiar with your Bidwell Park scenes, which vary from 1 mile. You do marvelous things with water and the lifeguards and all the people in the water, but also in the upper park. Do those Bidwell Park paintings have a special meaning for you?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I used to go up there and be there half an hour before the sun got up, and then I would be all set up to paint the minute that the sun broke the eastern rim of the canyon. So yes, I love the park.
But you also take off and go to places like Jamaica, where you love to paint the beach. What do those scenes mean to you?
I find those beach pieces to be tied up with the experience of vacation. They're a completely different point of view, more relaxed. Most of the time, I'm working and people are standing around watching and talking to me at the same time. So there's a real social aspect to those that maybe is less common when I'm working in the upper park.
To me, what is similar in all of your work is that fascination with light.
Oh, yeah. You know, Tom Griffith was my most influential instructor, and he taught me how to see light and to understand it in terms of color. It's in large part derived from the Impressionist mode of light as color, and that's fundamental to all of my work, whether it's still life or portraiture or landscape. That's the first thing that I consider when I set up to do a painting is, where's my light source and how am I lining up with it?
Well, you were saying that Tom helped you to see light. What does that mean?
He taught me how to see color in things, and it's a process of naming the color that you see, because you might have an asphalt road, but if it has a shadow cast across it, that shadow could be a very blue-gray, depending on what kind of light you're getting. And he taught me how to recognize that color and then translate it into pigment.
Do you find the fact that you work in pastel, I think you told me you had, what, 1,000 pastels?
Oh, easily.
Easily. Each one of those has a specific chromatic value. Do you think that carries over even into your oils, and does it help your ability to distinguish nuances of color?
I use the same process I've used for 40 years. It always works the same way. Any pastel stick that I pick up is evaluated. It's given a name. Is it blue, red, yellow, orange? And then it's evaluated for intensity and for value. So that's the process, and that applies to oil paint when I'm mixing it from pure pigments or to when I pick up a stick of pastel.
Do you find you approach pastel and oil painting any differently?
I guess the main difference would be if I'm working with paint, then I start from identification of the basic color, and then immediately I'm adjusting value and then adjusting intensity. Whereas if I'm working with pastel, I'm looking for that, searching among the pastels for the one that is the right color initially. Is it a red? And then the intensity of it. With a paintbrush, I don't have to look for it. I just make it by following this process.
I'm struck sitting in your studio by the variety of sizes that you use. I was looking at a tiny one. It must be something like 3 by 4 inches.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at a very large one. Why the differences? Is there a great deal of difference to you in your painting on a small scale compared to a large scale?
A lot of that is maybe accidental. In some instances, I've acquired frames. Sometimes I've had small pieces of matte board or pastel board. The large things are often done because they can be quite dramatic and impressive in juried competition. The piece behind me is destined to be entered in national competition, and there is something to be said for scale when competing for attention.
How about a little bit about the difference between plein air painting, and tell the listeners what that entails? And you also take photographs of scenes that you develop in your studio.
Working from photographs in the studio, while it's convenient in that you can be in the under the air conditioner or the heater in the winter, it's much more difficult because there's a real natural tendency when you're out in front of the actual landscape, or if you have a model, you can ignore a lot more easily. When you have a photograph in front of you, there's all that detail, and it's very difficult to be more selective. That's the biggest thing. It's very difficult to be selective for me when I have a photograph that I'm working from.
Of course, you've done so many years of plein air painting that you must have wonderful things stored in your memory bank that you can access even in your studio looking at a photograph.
Well, yeah, I think the biggest thing is the difficulty with photographs as far as concerns value and color. You either get the high-end values or you get the low tones. It's very difficult to get good value and good color at both extremes of the value scale. That's probably one of the biggest difficulties with a photograph. And then the limitations of the camera as far as catching color. You have to remember that color in the shadow is richer and nicer than that black tone that you usually wind up with in the photograph if you've got the high end. So that's the biggest thing.
Well, thank you. And that's going to be a wonderful exhibition. I want to remind everyone that the reception is tonight from 5 to 7 o'clock at the Chico Arts Center right in the train station, 5th and Orange Street. The show will be running through the 29th of July.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts where you live. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio. Thank you.